Good morning. 7:26 on September. Excuse me, on September the 29th, 2013. Yeah, I waited till it was light out again before I started walking this morning. I figure if I can wait on the weekends, I don't have to go out and it's two less days I have to walk around in the dark. Okay, I can live with that. Got the blood moving. It's cold. It's 40 degrees. It's quite chilly. You can see my breath. Of course, I worked up a bit of heat on my walk, so yeah, that exhalation is quite warm compared to the 40 degree temperatures in the air. So, let's see. Yeah, yesterday I got home and I had to get some breakfast, just a cup of coffee, and went down and sat at my computer, started puttering about. And the next thing I know, it's after lunch. It's like, what? Wait a minute, hold it. Where? So I quick and ran over to the other computer and found the file that I uploaded. And got that going just about the time I saw Tara Lee's reminder on email. It's like, oh yeah. No, I recorded, I just forgot to do anything with it afterwards. I did upload it, but that was it. So, yeah, brain dead. I claim brain cloud. So yeah, it's cold enough that the furnace ran yesterday. And it doesn't... too surprising, the furnace does run quite a lot, but we have central air, so the fan always runs and circulates the cool air out from the basement in the summer and keeps the air moving so that the cellar doesn't pool up with cold air in the fall, in the winter. It's actually quite comfortable below grade. Because there's no exposure to the elements on most of the walls, so you know the windows in their little cells, in their little wells, in the pockets beside the house, they don't let a lot of cold air attack. So yeah, it stays quite snugly in the winter, and because cold air sinks, it stays quite cool in the summer. So other than the fact that we've got no view down there, it's no natural light to speak of. Temperature-wise, it's quite comfortable. And since the only window on the world that I pay too much attention to is the one on my screen, it doesn't really matter. At least not to me. So that's it. So, in news, I've been invited to be guest of honor as an author for the first time. Cosine is coming back in 2015. They're taking a break in 2014, but they're getting stuff lined up now, and I need to save the date, as they say, because I will be guest of honor at Cosine 2015 down in Colorado Springs, which should be fun. It should be a blast. I love Cosine. Part of it is that it's really quite small. It's, you know, there may be 3 or 4 breakout rooms. And yet they still pull in some interesting people. Last time was S.M. Sterling, Steve Sterling, who was a really sweet guy. really knowledgeable guy. I enjoyed meeting him eventually. The time before that, I think, was Charlie Strauss, which was also a thrill to meet. I don't know if I put him in the same category of nice guy as Steve Sterling, but it's probably because I don't know him very well and he was on foreign turf. Sterling, at least, has been to Coastline before, I believe. So he's also been around 20 years longer than Charlie Strauss, so I think that makes a difference too when you sit on panels as much as Steve Sterling has. It shows, I hope, to have his nonchalance and aplomb. Although, I don't expect to live that long, so yeah, that's probably going to be a problem. Anyway, I have sat on a lot of panels. I have been on display at conferences. It's not really much different from a convention and a conference. So, other than the amount of preparation, and usually when you're at a conference, that's to present a paper, and so the upfront work is really quite important. Whereas when you go to a convention, not so much. It's a show up and chat. Unless you're moderating. If you're moderating, then you probably ought to at least have a few questions in the can, just in case. And I'm hoping I'm going to get my schedule for Mile High, which starts in a month. That reminds me, I have to get my room. Oh, crap. Oh, I have to do that before tomorrow because the room rates go up. But I'll be down there for 3 days. So that will interrupt the walk. But perhaps what I can do is record some stuff there. For upload, if not then, then later. So yeah, yesterday was a sleepy day. Yesterday was quite a horrible day in terms of focus. The day before was worse because I'd stayed up so late the night before and I took no opportunities that presented themselves to take a nap, which I should have, because I got to be 7 o'clock last night, and I'm falling asleep in my chair. And I'm thinking, well, this is kind of dumb. There's no point in this. So I logged out, went to bed around 8. And I slept through till almost 6 o'clock this morning. So I must have been tired, because I never sleep that long. I woke up a couple times, like once at 2 o'clock, and thought, well, that's 6 hours. I could get up, and thought, no, you did this before and got in trouble. Roll over, go back to sleep. Shut the hell up. Oh, we've got an election coming. School board election. I have to figure out who's in favor of schools and who's in favor of standards. It's one of the problems with education right now is that this Common Core curriculum is not about education, it's about schools. And I don't really, I understand it from a frustration standpoint, I understand it very well. Everybody's being pinched. Poverty is killing our schools. But rather than address the issue of poverty and trying to figure out how to deal with creating excellent educational opportunities in an environment of endemic poverty, we're trying to figure out how to hold schools accountable for not spending the amount of money that they need to in order to provide excellent educational opportunities. And it's really not about money, although it is about money. At some point, there's some minimum threshold that we have to be willing to spend. And at the moment, we're spending way below that threshold, generally speaking, and across the board. And all of that. Monk pole. I've used the analogy of the 50-cent Mercedes before, and it doesn't matter if you double the budget, you're still not going to buy a Mercedes. And it's the same thing with the educational budget. They're predicated on the 50%, on the 50-cent Mercedes. They're predicated on the idea that for mere pennies on the ten thousands of dollars, we can achieve the same kinds of outcomes that we can if we actually invested in ways that made sense. Now, part of the problem is teacher education. There's no question about that. A lot of teachers are really good. A lot of teachers are okay. More teachers are just struggling to get by. There are very few, I am convinced, there are very few truly bad teachers. There are a lot of teachers who are struggling under a set of models that doesn't actually hold true. The first problem is endemic poverty, because it means that the original teacher-to-student promise, which was, if you study hard and do a good job in school, you will be able to finish school eventually, whether that's through high school or through trade school or through college or higher, you will eventually translate that hard work into a comfortable livelihood that will stand with you for your life, for the rest of your life. So it's a promise for later that was made to me when I was in school, and which, quite frankly, I didn't believe then. Quite correctly, it turns out. I don't believe I was the first generation to have this circumstance, but I'm certainly not the last generation. So this promise from teachers to students that this is going to make sense eventually, that this is going to pay off eventually, that this is going to have some kind of advantage to you in concrete terms later in your life, that's gone. No kid who is smart enough to stay in school is smart enough to buy it anymore. And so the promise from teacher to student is bankrupt. We have to start right there. Now, we also have to understand that people who are going to school hungry in the morning, people who are going to school without breakfast, are not going to work very well. We've understood that for a long time, which is why we have breakfast programs in schools, which are constantly being under attack as frivolous. But if you're going to take all the time and trouble and expense to put kids in school, the least you can do is make sure that they have, to the best of your ability, the tools they need to actually access the education. The larger problem is that the poverty is creating severe traumas. Family life is no longer a healthy old time for children. It's by and large hell, and it has been for a long time. And in a few widely scattered instances, sure, childhood is a pleasant and pleasurable time, but the reality for too many children is that it's impossible. It's adults who are mired in depression and desperation. It's people who are caught up in systems that they can't understand or control because they're so mired in their own desperation. I know when we were growing up in Maine, it's hard to really understand how poor we were, because my mother and father did a really good job of not letting us understand how poor we were. And in many cases, in a lot of ways, we were actually just as poor as everybody around us. But we had a garden, we fished, we hunted, had a big freezer, we did a lot of canning. We took advantage of the natural bounty that we grew and harvested. And growing up, it was always like, really? We have to have a three acre potato patch? And it turns out that, yeah. Actually, yeah, we did. And those 47 bushels of potatoes every fall kept us through until the following fall when we harvested new potatoes. And also provided the seed crop for the next year's crop. So we had the same potatoes year after year, along with a whole bunch of other stuff that we grew and harvested, canned and froze. Now, without that, we might have gone a lot hungrier. I remember we would have a lot of soups and chowders and stews, and I was like, okay, this is pretty good. Well, can we have a piece of meat? And there was, you know, there was meat in the chowder, but it was meat in the stew and fish in the chowder, and there's also a lot of corn chowder with the bits of bacon, which is actually one of my favorites. It's making my stomach grumble thinking about it right now. It's like, oh, it's that season for stews and chowders. We didn't make much chicken soup, which I thought was, I find now to be curious. Apparently chicken was as expensive as beef, or nearly so. It's not really anywhere near the disparity in price it is today. I prefer chicken stew myself, but I still remember quite fondly the rich stews that my mother used to put together with the root crops from the cellar and a pound of beef for the six of us. It was really quite good. It was really actually quite delicious. So in terms of making the meat money spread, yeah, we didn't eat a lot of meat. And I wasn't really aware of it because most of it was in beef, you know, so in stews and soups and chowders. And my father would go out fishing with my cousin Herbert in the summer, and he'd bring back pounds and pounds and pounds of fish, which we would then fillet, cut up, and freeze, and then use through the winter. So we always had codfish for our chowders. We always had potatoes, of course, and onions, because we always had onions. You had to have onion. My grandmother cooked. The joke in the family was that didn't matter what recipe you asked, she'd always start with, well, take an onion. Even if it was apple pie, she would. That was the joke, even if it was apple pie. Take an onion. She didn't actually put onions in apple pies, at least not as far as I know. Although a little caramelized onion and apple might go. Never mind. So yeah, growing up in my house was onions and turnips. Rutabagas, I guess they are. Potatoes. Squash. We grew winter squash. We grew hellacious winter squash. Blue Hubbard squash, because they kept well in the cellar. Huge things. 40 pounders. Cut them up. Cut one open and then freeze part you don't use. And almost 18 minutes on the back half. 17 and a fraction. That's good enough. But, yeah, now I'm jonesing for the old family farm, for the plot that we had that I hated at the time, and probably wouldn't take care of now if I had it. Story of my life. At any rate, I am at the back gate. Tomorrow is another day. It'll probably be a dark and early day since it's Monday and I've got things to do. But with any luck at all, I'll talk to you then.